one thing that we're seeing is that founders are increasingly seeing the value of the people role earlier and earlier, and especially second-time founders.
Welcome to the People Masterminds podcast. Join us in the studio as we sit down with an amazing guest, Elena Pantazi, partner at venture capitalist Northzone. We're diving into the world of VCs and their view on people and culture at scale-ups. What's the magic formula that VCs look for when investing in the next big thing? And are founders and people leaders crushing it, in her opinion? Or is there still work to be done? We are Evelise and Crystal, and we love to talk about this topic. Because are those VCs really interested in people and culture, or is it just about the money?
Thank you for tuning in again, and welcome to the new ones here. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button in your favorite podcast app to stay in the loop. And keep those ideas, tips, tricks, and feedback coming our way. Send a DM via LinkedIn or email us to info@peoplemasterminds.com. And if you want to receive our regular brain bites in your email inbox, go to peoplemasterminds.com/brainbites and subscribe. Let's move on to today's guest.
Yeah, Elena, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Calling in from London.
Indeed, sunny London today.
Nice, because it's freezing cold here and it's April, it's crazy. Evelise is going to try to summarize you in a couple of sentences.
Yeah, are you ready for that? You better buckle up. So sit down and enjoy the ride. Elena is originally from Cyprus and she lives in the UK. She joined Northzone around 4 years ago after being a director at Bain Capital. Besides being an analytical whiz, she's also a karaoke enthusiast, and she's quite sporty too. She actually just crushed a marathon. She prefers to WhatsApp people in emojis instead of text. And she has two very clever and sassy daughters. And last but not least, Negroni Week is a big thing for her. Elena, Negroni Week! What's Negroni?
I'm so impressed by your detective work. I'm not sure where you got all the
Sherlock Holmes is in the room, ladies.
So Negroni Week is every week, and that's the beauty of it.
Every week.
Sounds good. What is it?
It's just any opportunity to drink Negronis, essentially. So
the cocktail.
My biggest achievement at Northzone was introducing Negroni Week whenever we get together. So,
oh, really? So yes. That's your biggest achievement. That's so nice. Well, thanks for joining us. So we're going to start with something that is quite top of mind for a lot of scale-ups. Companies are focusing more and more on the bottom line. They're laying off people, they're decreasing expenses as revenues slow down. We're curious, first of all, what's your take on that and what do you expect in the future?
Yes, I mean, undoubtedly, there's a lot of uncertainty in the current economic climate. And I think it's been a very challenging time for a lot of our founders, but also a lot of the people leaders in their team.
Yeah.
So maybe just as an example, or we do a yearly survey where we speak to our founders and we ask them, what are the key priorities for you during this year? And as you would expect, a lot of the things that they're focusing on are navigating this uncertainty, focusing really on operational metrics, thinking more about fundraising, but also at the same time, looking at the team, right-sizing the team, but also trying to ensure a positive, healthy culture, whilst also keep attracting great talent and retaining their top performers. So there's a lot going on, a lot of pressure from different directions. And I think often the people leader is in the core of all these things happening around them.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And maybe a bit more general question, because you said, yeah, scale-ups are looking for new funding, etc. Considering an investment in a scale-up,
what are you specifically looking for from a people and culture perspective?
That's a really great question. And I think, you know, as investors and especially early stage investors, the human capital component is essential to whether or not you're going to lean in into that company. And I think, you know, it's very much embedded into our investment team and how they think about companies. So I don't think it's something that can be outsourced to maybe a people leader within a VC or a people partner, but it's really ingrained into how our investors think about companies. And it really starts with the founding team. So really, you know, getting to know the team and figuring out what makes a stellar entrepreneur and a stellar team around them. And, you know, really what we found over the years is that there's no easy way of decoding this, because there's brilliant founders and their teams come in different shapes or forms. So it's less straightforward as, you know, defining what a great CTO is.
Yeah.
Because for my portfolio, we had founders who, you know, range from 18 years old to late 50s, different backgrounds, different walks of lives, and different combinations of people. So when we look at a company, there's no sort of cookie cutter framework of how we evaluate them, but we have identified certain traits or themes that we like to see in teams.
Yeah.
That think, if we think back of, you know, the most successful entrepreneurs or the most successful founder teams tend to exhibit it.
And what are those themes that you're looking for?
Yeah, so going a bit deeper into this, I think there's something around having this deep drive to become an entrepreneur, because it's not the most straightforward path, right? There's a lot of risk involved. So typically there's some sort of deep affiliation to whatever they're doing. Which means that also they have the tenacity and grit to power through it when things don't go to plan. So that's sort of one thing that we tend to see. Then the second I would say is this growth mindset and ability to scale.
Yeah.
So even if you're super young, having this hunger of, okay, I don't know anything about this topic, but I'm going to go and find out about it and then come back and really have a proper view. I think we've seen some of the most successful scale-ups in founding teams that have this sort of ingrained in them. And then the third I would say is having some form of magnetism of or charisma to attract people around you.
Yeah.
You don't need to be the most extroverted person. You could be highly technical, but really having something that attracts great talent, customers, investors. So almost forming a tribe around you.
So very much behavioral elements that you're currently describing, not so easy to measure.
Yes, very difficult to measure. And I would say it's definitely more of an art than a science.
Yeah, it is.
And something that also I wanted to mention is that it really depends on the investor founding team dynamics as well, because we encourage our investors to develop their own strike zones, their own things that they're passionate about. And I think there needs to be that match and that chemistry with the founding team both ways. Because essentially VCs want to be trusted partners along the way. So I wouldn't just view it as, okay, the VC is evaluating the team of the founding team, but also vice versa. Is this a relationship and is this a partner that I want for my growth journey?
Yeah, exactly. So of course, if you want to invest, you do your due diligence as well. What are specific HR metrics that you're looking into?
So it depends on the stage of the company. I think a lot of it, you know, as mentioned before, is more the human elements, the deeper understanding of the team, looking at complementarity between the founding team. But then the more you scale, the more things that we would typically talk about and track at board meetings, but also discuss in a new round would be things like hiring.
Yeah.
So what are the hiring plans? What are the executive level hires that have been made? And also seeing where as a VC we can support in those hiring plans.
Yeah.
And org charts, you know, how do we build the team as it scales? What's the optimal way of building around that go-to-market, which can vary significantly? Mm-hmm. And then remuneration and incentivization. So earlier on, it's more, you know, on the board discussions, but then later on, you know, forming remuneration committees and really going deeper into that topic is something that we often see. And then lastly, employee engagement. So, you know, we're not very prescriptive on which tools or how teams do it, but I think it's really important to have a good sense of how engaged the team is and, you know, seeing that layer of culture within the company.
And do all those potential participations have these numbers on the table? Because I can imagine from my own experience that often there is not a talent acquisition strategy yet, or we did not think about remuneration in a way that we should think about it yet. Or so how do you approach that? And what is the stage maybe when you enter? Maybe there's a difference there as well.
Yeah, of course. And as investors, we invest, you know, from very early stage, seed stage, all the way to pre-IPO. So I completely agree with you. It really depends on the stage and the size of the company. And I think when you're, you know, three founders starting something out, there is obviously very little expectation to have any foundations in place already. I think at that stage is much more about, okay, how does this team think about hiring? How do they, what is their vision? How do they plan to attract great people? Do we already see signs that they're able to do this? And then obviously the more developed you are, the more you expect that you have some foundations in place already.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah.
But one thing that we're seeing is that founders are increasingly seeing the value of the people role earlier and earlier.
Mm, yeah, that's what I noticed as
music
well.
To our ears.
Yeah. And not always defined as a fully fledged people lead. It could be a chief of staff or a strategy and ops, or, but at least someone setting the foundations from the early days, looking through the people lens, which I think is great.
Yeah. You just mentioned one of the KPIs or topics you focus on is remuneration and incentivization. Could you tell a bit more about that? What's specifically interesting for you to see?
Yes, I think for that, it's less about having a prescriptive way that we want our companies to compensate their employees. I think each company is very different and they can define their own way of incentivizing and attracting talent.
Yeah,
but it's more around helping them to have a philosophy around it. So what is your employer value proposition? How do you want to compensate compared to markets? And helping them with you know, tools and data to be able to articulate that in the best way. So for example, often companies might say, you know, for us, we really, you know, for our specific product, our tech and product teams are the most important assets. So for this team, we're going to pay 75th centile salary. But then for other teams, markets, or maybe for other companies, they might be higher on equity, lower on base salary. I think there's lots of creative ways of setting it up. But really, we try to be a thought partner there and to just, you know, give them some examples of things that have worked at different stages that they might want to implement in their own way of attracting talent.
Yeah, exactly. Now we would like to zoom in a bit more on the role of people and culture in scale-ups. As you said, and that's what we notice as well, is that more and more companies express that they find it more important.
Okay, it's time for some sponsor talk. This podcast episode sponsor is Lepaya. And Lepaya helps organizations and teams level up with personalized learning programs. They're all about power skills that make a real difference, like communication and problem-solving skills.
Yes, and they also focus on developing first-time managers in, for example, effective coaching, goal setting, and giving feedback. These are the power skills that keep your organization ahead of the game. With Lapaya, you'll have the greatest teams around for top performance.
So Elena, at what company size or phase would you hire a first people leader?
What we're seeing is that founders are increasingly valuing this role earlier and earlier. And especially second-time founders who have been through it before.
Yeah. And they've happens if you don't organize this well.
It's actually interesting because two of our very early stage founders who have done it before have chosen super experienced people leaders very early on, even more experienced than we would typically, you know, think of. So it's great to see that there's some learnings there. But yeah, typically what we see is at seed stage, there doesn't need to be a dedicated function, but someone that is setting the foundations and helping the founder think through, you know, talent, internal comms, culture, articulating the values.
Yeah.
And that could be called many different things. So we've seen it being called chief of staff, people ops, strategy and ops and people. So I think it's it really depends on the company as well. I think highly technical companies can really use a hire like this early on as well. To be that bridge between the engineering teams as well. And then as you scale, we typically see that once you hit 30 people, then that's when you need to have a dedicated hire. And then obviously the more you scale, the more you can build that team and add different capabilities. Very roughly, we see that it's typically 5% of the total headcount, but it really depends on the company. I don't know if that's similar to what you're seeing as well.
It really differs, I must say. So sometimes you have scale-ups with a more experienced founder or just a very self-aware founder that thinks, okay, this is super important for our organization and we need to set up this function and the team right. And sometimes we work for scale-ups with a couple of hundred employees and no people leader yet. So that's quite interesting. But 5%, yeah.
It sounds reasonable, but it also depends on the number of hires that you want to make.
So let's say including recruitment.
Yeah, let's say we have 200 now, we want 400 next year. If you need to recruit so many people, you need a well-sized and experienced recruitment team. So I often see huge recruitment teams in organizations because we're hiring so many people.
Yeah.
And then the people function is smaller. So it truly depends. But yeah, it sounds like a fair number dependent on...
Yeah, on the pace of the growth as well. I mean, if a scale-up is growing, but not like crazy, then the people teams are often a bit smaller. But I think, 5% is a good ballpark number. And talking about the people leader, what do you think makes a good people leader in a scale-up?
Yeah, so I think where we've seen the transition happen in the past few years and what makes, you know, a people leader great is really moving away from the mindset of, okay, I have day-to-day traditional HR responsibilities to more, okay, I have end-to-end ownership of the whole people strategy experience. I'm very in the loop of the actual business and I can be a true people partner to all the business leaders of the organization. Also, we're seeing that some of the stellar ones in our portfolio have a lot of operational rigor. So they're more, you know, on top of data, trends, new tooling, ways to improve effectiveness around the organization. And then finally, which I think is probably the most important, is really becoming this trusted advisor, coach, right-hand person to the founder and the C-level team, which is really important, especially in challenging times.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very interesting angle.
Because how do you see that happening in scale-ups? Do they have that role or is their role more operational?
I think it always will depend on the company and the philosophy of the founder. But overall, we've definitely seen a shift in the perception of the role, the importance of it, and the strategic significance of it. And it's become very much organic. And I think it's, you know, if you look at what's been happening in the world the past few years, it's been such a journey for this function, from navigating the pandemic, which was completely unprecedented, to this massive talent boom where everyone was hiring us at unprecedented rates. And then now through this economic uncertainty and changes. So it's been very much brought to the forefront, I think, of each founder's agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And we have a question from one of our listeners for you. It's Irene.
Hi, Irene.
Thank you for bringing your question to the table. Irene says, VCs spend a good amount of time assessing the skills and commitment of leader teams before they step in. What do VCs value in the people and culture teams of the companies they invest in?
I mean, I think the first thing is to see that there is actually a people and culture team, that there is inspiration. And, you know, I laugh, but it's depending on the stage, that's not always the case. And then second, that obviously in the same way that you would look at other functions, that the leader of the team and the team itself is very experienced and able to execute the scale-up plan of the company. But thirdly, and I think most importantly, that it has the cultural backing of the founding and the C-level team to make it happen, so that there is true empowerment in this domain and that it's something that's on the radar of the C-level organization. Because you can have the best-in-class people leader, but unless they're really empowered and that shows, then it's very difficult to become that true partner to the founder.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so we were also in touch that you had a session with several chief people officers yesterday. So in your experience, what are some of the greatest challenges people leaders need to deal with right now?
Yeah, that was really interesting to hear firsthand from our chief people officers about what they're grappling with right now. Because I think from the VC's point of view, we definitely are not experts in this field. I think what the benefit of having this role on the VC side is that we can see lots of patterns and we can talk to lots of amazing people, but it's a very different experience to actually doing it yourself.
For sure.
And actually being in the front line. So really what I'm about to summarize is very much from their perspective. But there was a lot of conversation around how do we navigate internal communication at the moment. Because there's so much uncertainty on the macro level. Yeah. Every company is going through, you know, challenges, changes in plan, thinking through runway, thinking through fundraise. And, you know, on the one hand, you really want to share, to be transparent. But then you also don't want to, you know, scare your employees off by giving them a really grim, uncertain condition around them that they can't control. So it's always this balancing act. And I think, you know, there were some comments around chief people officers saying, okay, we're sharing what's important and what's relevant to you. But then there is a piece that, you know, trust the founders and we're on it. And, you know, this is the vision and we're in it together, but we don't need to keep updating you every day about what's happening. Or for example, there is going to be change in plans and it's going to feel not very consistent, but longer term, this is the direction, this is what we're aiming for, and we're going to get there. So there was a lot of, you know, conversation around how do we manage this transparency versus candid reassurance in the internal communication. And then the second one I think that was covered a lot was around this founder resilience and well-being. I think it's a very different conversation than a couple of years ago. I think founders are always on a lonely journey, especially if they're on their own without other co-founders, and they always need some support. But I think in these times, it's a very different type of support because it's a really highly stressful environment out there. And I think just bringing communities together, be it founder communities or chief people officer communities, can really help in sort of seeing that, you know, a lot of people are in similar positions, and let's share some of our learnings here and be able to exchange unfiltered opinions as a group.
Yeah, for sure. I recognize the challenges in communication as well. And we had a lot to communicate about over the past years, of course. We had COVID and then the hybrid working, how to do that well, the layoffs and everything that is going on. So I also believe that taking a lead in that communication is crucial for people leaders to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for the listeners, if you have any people and culture related questions that have to do with your work for a startup or a scale-up, let us know so we can address it in the podcast. It can be a question for us or for our podcast guest. Send us a DM via LinkedIn or an email to info@peoplemasterminds.com. So, we have 5 statements for you, and you can only reply with agree or disagree.
I'm going to do the first one. A company's culture is just as important as its product.
Agree.
Founders and CEOs underestimate the role of HR in a scale-up.
50-50.
That's not allowed. Yes or no, agree or disagree?
Disagree. I'm being positive. Disagree.
HR people in scale-ups are just not strategic enough.
Disagree.
A company's success is ultimately determined by the quality of its people.
Agree.
If HR isn't getting a seat at the boardroom table, it's because they haven't shown yet what their added value is.
Disagree.
If you could pick one, which statement would you like to comment on?
The second one, I think, because that's what made me pause the most.
Founders and CEOs underestimate the role of HR in a scale-up. Please elaborate.
Yes. I do understand where this statement is coming from, and I think it's been historically true, but I have seen enough signs and a lot of positive examples that I think this is definitely changing.
Yeah, well, that's what we just said. We see the change going on, so that's good. About the company culture part, because I'm convinced that culture will change as you grow as an organization, which is also a good thing if it develops in the right direction, of course. And one of our other listeners, Schelto, hi Schelto, has a question about this. He would like to know if it's inevitable that the culture changes once a VC steps on board. And if so, what could you do to make sure this change has a positive impact on the company?
Interesting, because I often see some fear in organizations when the VC is stepping in.
I understand where this question is coming from. I think, you know, by nature, when you get VC funding, there is an expectation that you're going to be focusing on growth.
Yeah.
You're going to be accelerating and you're going to be striving for a very ambitious outcome. And yes, of course, that means that there might be more emphasis on performance. Things might feel more fast-paced. And, you know, things may evolve. So I understand that, you know, if it's a differently run environment, it might feel different. However, I think that a lot of successful companies have been able to preserve some of their values, cultural elements that make them unique from the get-go during this period of fast acceleration. And I think the most successful ones really make them their strength of, you know, why they exist, what is their mission, how they can attract great people. And they can also articulate what the employer value proposition is in a very honest way so that the people who are in the company are really driven by, you know, what we're building and that we're building it quickly and that we want to win this market or want to disrupt this and do something different. So yes, I think it can be a very positive force in the company as well. I think where it might go wrong is where there's a bad articulation of what the objective is into the outside world. So you might be joining a company thinking it's something different, and then there's a mismatch in culture and expectations.
We call that cultural Botox.
Cultural Botox, yeah. It looks good from the outside, but once you enter that company, you'll soon figure
and you're
out.
You're in for a couple of months and suddenly the Botox ends and then you see reality. So that's not often a pleasure, is it?
No. So, but it's important to be explicit about your culture. If you want to, especially if you want to remain certain elements, you need to be explicit. This is what we stand for as an organization. This is what goes really, really well and what we want to keep. But there's also some things that maybe want to change because a more emphasis on performance, that's also sometimes like a good thing if there becomes more
emphasis.
We have
one of our amazing founders who's been voted, actually, his company has been voted as one of the best places to work. He says, I don't have a ping pong table culture.
No.
This is not what we do here.
Good for him.
We work hard. We have fun. We love what we do. This is what we're building and we're proud of it. But, you know, if you're expecting pizzas and ping pong tables, it's just not us.
Yeah, Gozer is not a ping pong table, sure.
But it's also good to be open and honest about that because then people also know what they're up to.
Exactly.
And do I choose to be part of this? Do I opt in or do I opt out? Because it's not me. So being explicit is a good thing. So, what last piece of advice do you have for founders and HR leaders and scale-ups who are looking to build a strong and effective HR function?
My advice would be connect with each other and with as many people as possible in this field. We have the privilege as a VC to be, you know, observing lots of different companies, how they operate, how they scale. And despite their uniqueness and individual intricacies, there's a lot of common patterns, a lot of shared experiences, and a lot of goodwill out there to share. So my advice would be both on the founder point of view and on the people leader point of view, find like-minded leaders and exchange ideas and experiences as you're building up your function and as you figure out how you want to set up that relationship between the founder and the people lead.
Amen. Elena, thank you so much for being our guest. It's very insightful to hear your perspective.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you would like to read the highlights of this podcast episode, go to peoplemasterminds.com/brainbites to subscribe to our regular Brain Bites. And if you already did, you'll automatically receive them in your inbox. Did you enjoy listening? Please rate this episode in your favorite podcast app and subscribe yourself if you haven't already. Then you'll stay up to date with the latest episodes and more people will be able to find us. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for more.